Well, we appreciate the presence of everyone, and we did have some visitors come in. Good to see everybody. And those monkey girls, good to have them with us today. Good to see everyone. Appreciate you being here. I emailed Colin last Wednesday night. Of course, they're not on the same time schedule that we are, but I guess it was the next day I got word back from him. He said, "That is fantastic news. I have told Jordan and Amy, and they are delighted about it. This is the first support they have received, and the news was a real encouragement to them both. He's been trying to make contact with people about their plans, and nothing much has been happening until now." And then there's some more that he says. And then he says, "Please tell the congregation there how much we appreciate what they're doing, both for this support for Jordan and Amy, and also for their constant prayers and support of us and the work in Bangor. You all are a real blessing to us." And then I did later get a good note from Jordan himself. And he's coming over here to try to raise some funds for his work. And he says if he gets the opportunity, he's going to come out here to see us. And at any rate, it's a long way from most of civilization. And I don't know if he'll get to do that or not. Michael Hildreth asked me a while back after he got back from his last trip. He was scheduled to make a report on that work at Sherman Drive in Denton. And he asked me if I want him to come out here. And I told him it's just too far. You don't need to do that. Just keep us posted on your work. So they're thinking of us. And in fact, we got word from Clarendon the other day about the Navajo work. I have problems on my computer of, you know, making copies of things from attachments. And sometimes I can't get it done and all of that. At any rate, they are doing things out on the reservation, and they sent us some reports. And so just know that that work is continuing too. And of course, we continue involvement with India and Africa. And the TV program, you may have seen some of it this morning. And so various things are going on with the orphans' homes. So it's just great. And you're able to work in various places because of your love for Christ and your great generosity. And we appreciate that so very much. Well, I want to talk about the fact that they just didn't know, or we'll put this as our title this morning, "They Knew Not." They knew not. I think I might have mentioned one time a long, long time ago, a grandfather picked up his little granddaughter. She had been knocked down inadvertently by a little boy, and he would run by or whatever, and she was hurt and crying, and he picked her up, and he was trying to console her, you know, and she just told him, he just didn't know any better. He just didn't know. You think about the way that we adults are sometimes, and there are a lot of things I don't need to know and don't have to know, and I'm grateful to God that I don't. You could spend your whole life just 24 hours a day just studying in one discipline and never go out, never go see anybody. There's just so much to understand and so many disciplines that, you know, they separate the information. And so there's just a lot of things I don't know and I can't know, and I'm glad I don't know, because a lot of things I don't like to have to study anyway. I just don't get any enjoyment out of it. It's kind of repelling. I don't want to have to think about it. But I have certain basic individual personal spiritual interests, just as I have physical interests. And these things are attached to my soul so dearly. And it's not just me. It's everybody made in the image of God. And so this drives us out of a sense of longing and perhaps curiosity to satisfy the questions and the urgings of our heart to get information. I need some more information. I need to know what to say. I need to know how to feel. I need to know what to think. I need to know where to focus, where to give most of my attention in life. I've got to diversify. But where do I need to put most of my focus in life? And the Bible, of course, is very clear about all those things. And in telling us the story and getting us to our point of balance, it tells us, among other things, about persons on occasion who just didn't know what they needed to know. They could have known, and they should have known, but for some reason, they just did not know. And the first point on this lesson that I want to mention, they did not know the warning. They did not know the warning. And if you have your New Testament, I want you to go to Matthew 24. You might recall that Matthew 24 is the Matthew's account of where he talks about the destruction of Jerusalem and the coming of Christ, beginning in about verse 35. He'll separate the section between signs that signal that Jerusalem is about to fall. And verse 35 and following, there are no signs, but the Lord is coming. And so you need to be focused, lest He catches you unaware. Some of the parables the Lord taught, you know. The parable of the 10 virgins. You better be careful. You don't want to miss out. You don't want to face a closed door. You want to take advantage of opportunity while you have opportunity to get right with God, to live in the light of God, so that you can face God. And that's the way it has to be. But in Matthew 24, when he's talking about his coming again, he puts it up against Noah and Noah's day. The thing that could have saved the people in Noah's day became the element of their destruction. You ever thought about it that way? When Noah preached to those people, and evidently from Genesis 6, about 120 years while the ark was being built, Peter would tell me he was a preacher of righteousness, so not only did he work in construction, he worked in preaching. And so he preached and he preached and he preached, and nobody listened. And there was a flood coming. There was a great rain coming. Oh, we've never seen a rain. And there is no indication in Genesis it had ever rained. There is no indication of that. And so he's talking about this deluge of water that's going to come. Oh, he's out of his head. He's just, you know, he's just imagining things. But he wasn't. And he was preaching facts. And it was being tied to the way they were then living. You're responsible for your character. And look at how you guys are living out here. Violence everywhere. Reminds you of America. Filth everywhere. Reminds you of America. And so he preached to them. But without great effect. And Peter will tell us in 1 Peter 3:21 that Noah's family was saved by water. And that's why I make this point. The very thing that could have also save them and buoyed them up in the salvation confines of that gopher wood, because of their rejection of the invitation, became the element of their destruction. And it reminds me of the fact that Jesus in the New Testament is said to be our Savior. And when you reject the proffered offer of salvation, Acts 17:30 and 31, He becomes the element of your destruction. You're going to be judged by Jesus. He wants to save you. He came to save you. He tells you that He wants you to be saved. He's going to become the vehicle of your judgment and of your condemnation. Amazing. I want to raise some questions with regard to warning. They knew not the warning. In Matthew 24, even though Noah preached, the New Testament says they knew not. They knew not until the flood came. Verse 39, and took them all away. Matthew 24:39, it took them all away. What took George? Cancer. What took Harry? Oh, diabetes. What did Jim die of? Oh, it was the consequences of a terrible stroke. And on you go. What about Mary? A terrible car accident. And on you go with what took them away. And when you talk about all that generation of people in Noah's time, what took them away? It was the flood. It was the flood that took them away. It's interesting to think about it that way. So as I think about how Noah tried to warn them, You could raise several questions about that warning and others that follow in the Bible and that God has made to us, not only in the Bible but also in nature. The first question is, did you hear the warning? Did you hear the warning? Sometimes, you know, we'll get a little siren here in Sheffield. I guess it indicates maybe a tornado's in the area or something or other. I'm not up on all the signals yet. But, you know, we do get warnings. And on television, you know, they give you warnings of, you know, bad weather approaching or tornadoes coming and all of that. And there are air raid warnings and wars, you know, and all kinds of warnings. Well, the first question is, did you hear it? You know, regarding warnings, with regard to spiritual matters, God has always made a way for people to be, to get it, to hear the warning. He did things in the Old Testament regarding Moses and Pharaoh so that that would go throughout the world. In the Great Commission, He had the gospel preached throughout the whole earth. He wanted to make sure that everybody got the announcement, and the announcement also entailed a warning. And have you ever thought about the fact that just the empirical fact of the Bible itself, there's a warning. And the existence of the Church of Jesus Christ on this word, on this earth, stands as a constant, perpetual community warning. If people would just pay attention, if they would just come up with a desire to want to be right with God. I know people are struggling, trying to find ways to get through the day, trying to find some sort of solace to get them through the night, trying to make sense of life and trying to have purpose that'll enable them to get up in the morning. But they don't know. They don't know. Did you hear the warning? Well, maybe they heard it, but maybe that's all that happened and they did not act on it. Number two, did you understand the warning? Did you know what that signal was about? You might have heard something, but did you understand what it was about? You know, in the first place, Psalm 19, 1 through 4, the heavens do not speak in a literary or an oral form, and yet the sound of the significance of the heavens, he says, goes throughout the world. It goes throughout the earth. In Romans 10, 18 through 21, Luke draws on that when he's talking about the gospel going throughout the world in the first century. Well, did you understand it? Some evidently did not. Most did not come into the kingdom. So they heard, but they did not comprehend. You know, between Acts 9 and Acts 22, you have two different words used to show that the people with Saul of Tarsus, when he hears Jesus talking from heaven, they heard the sound, but they did not get the intelligible sense of it. Two different words, or two expressions, two ways of explaining it. Acts 9 says, you know, that they heard. Acts 22, they didn't hear. Well, they heard the sound, but they did not get the meaning. Well, I read the words, but I did not comprehend the point. That still goes on. And you recall one of those soils in the parable of the soil and the sower in Luke 8. Then cometh the devil and taketh the word out of the heart, lest they should believe. He does everything he can in distraction to get their minds off of the word before it produces faith. So we're all warned about those kinds of things. Did you understand the warning? Did you understand it? Romans 10, 19, you might think about that passage. Number three, did you credit the warning as serious? You know, when I think about Noah and preaching during his day, you'd think for 120 years, if that's actually what that verse means, you'd think after a while, Noah, you sure it's that serious? Why do you just keep on with this? Why do you keep reiterating? Is it really going to be like you say it is? Well, it is. But if you don't credit the warning as serious, how many times have children turned down the warnings of parents? When parents warn and warn and warn, son, why do you think I just kept on saying that? Why do you think I didn't mean it? Do you think I wasn't interested in you? I was trying to hold you down, keep you back. But sometimes, you know, we don't even have sense enough to credit genuine, creditable warnings. Did you take it as serious? Number four, did you heed the warning? Did you heed the warning? Most people do not when it comes to God. They just do not. Number five, how much warning did you get? Or how many times were you warned? You ever thought about the number of times that people have to obey the gospel in their lives? And maybe they come in contact with a brother here and a sister there and a congregation there and a Bible there and a program on TV and radio and events and all kinds of situations combine in their lives that amount to tremendous warnings. And even the atmosphere, the heavens, and the storms, and the car crashes, and the diseases, and the deaths, and the funerals. How many warnings does it take? How many funerals did you go to? And some people don't even go to funerals because they don't like funerals. Well, sometimes you need to be sobered up. Sometimes by funerals. Or maybe at least a trip to the cemetery, reading some headstones. There are lessons to be learned there. How much warning did you get? Life is full of it. It's full of warning. And nobody at judgment will have a right to point a finger at God and say, "Well, I was just not warned enough. Just like at the cross, come down now, we'll believe. If you'd given me greater warning, well, then I'd have known to take it more seriously." What else can God do that He has not done? Let's ask it like this. Number six, are you even capable of being warned? And the way people live, some people, it looks like some of them aren't. No, I'm beyond impression. I'm beyond intensified warning impression. I've heard so much talk and so much intensive talk, and it's just hysteria. I've just decided that people are just crazy and everything is just an hysteric warning, but it's not substantive. I'm tired of people crying wolf about things. And no, you can't. I don't care what you say. It's not going to bother me. And I cannot be warned. Number seven, did you consider yourself an exception to the warning? Did you think that maybe it might be good if everybody else listened to the signal, but you didn't have to? You didn't have to pay attention to the storm, but everybody else needed to. That the warnings were just for everybody else other than you all the time. Is that the way you looked at life? Did you see yourself an exception? And number eight, did you accept or reject the warning because of the one who gave it? Had a good friend who was a preacher, heard him say one time, he said, I failed third grade because I didn't like the teacher. I failed third grade math or whatever it was he said, some subject, because I didn't like the teacher. Well, that's really a wise move, isn't it? To turn down information because I didn't like the one who was passing it out. Here's some flu shot. Here's a pneumonia shot. Here's this. Well, who's over there? Well, I don't like her. I don't like him. I'm not going to get anything. Turning down medicine because you don't like the doctor. Turning down a message because you don't like the messenger. Remember in Matthew 11, Jesus said, God purposefully arranged John and me to be so different in personality and habit and social interests. He arranged that on purpose so that we could help people to understand it's not the messenger that really you're turning down or receiving. In a way, it's the message itself. The message itself. In our day, we sometimes get it said like this. Well, I just didn't like the way he said it. I'm not opposed to what he said. I just don't like the way he said it. And really what it comes down to in a lot of cases, no, you just didn't like what he said. And that's what Jesus was saying in Matthew 11. God chose John to be a certain way. A wilderness, a recluse. Robed in camel skin. Eating locusts. And here comes Jesus mixing and mingling at their weddings. And he said, wisdom is justified by her children. Or her works. God did that on purpose. And yet people are going to go to judgment and say, Lord, if you just had somebody on the earth that was a better teacher, a better preacher, better elder, better song leader, better this, better that, I would have surrendered. But it was all in the mechanism. It was all in the delivery. And God will say, no, it was the message. and you didn't want the message. You turned down the message, and now you're judged by the message. So there are a lot of things can be said and questions raised with regard to warnings, but they knew not the warning. Number two, and I want you to go here to John chapter 7 with me. In John chapter 7, they knew not the law. John 7, at least that's what was suggested. Some officers had been sent to the temple. Jesus was speaking over in the temple. The Sanhedrin this day decides they're going to bring Jesus before them as a body in a hearing. And so in verse 45, these men come back without Jesus. The officers therefore came to the chief priests and Pharisees, and they said unto them, "Why did ye not bring him?" The officers answered, "Never man so spake." That's one of those. It's one of those great, uninspired, accurate comments that just catches so much, because they're saying, in effect, no mere human being has ever talked like him before. That's exactly the case. Their evaluation as they stood there in the temple, no doubt waiting for an opportune moment to get him. The people are listening. And their job is to get him and bring him over. Well, why didn't he bring him? Where is he? Couldn't get it done. You didn't hear what we were hearing over there. Nobody spoke like Jesus speaks. The Pharisees therefore answered them, "Are ye also led astray?" Well, they didn't really say that they had become disciples, but their admission makes you wonder if they were perhaps leaning in that direction. How do you explain a man like that? Is he merely man? Men don't talk like that. Men have to be characterized by something else, by either inspiration or their very nature, the nature of their words or the nature of their person or both. Now that's a good insight. You know, apostles were not God. But inspiration itself gave them access to information that was beyond them. So either their words were strikingly different from ordinary words, or their person was strikingly different. That was Jesus' case. And since his person was strikingly different, so were his words. And that means he is what he claimed to be, the Son of God. "Are you also led astray? Hath any of the rulers believed on him? Or of the Pharisees?" One of them is going to be named right here. Nicodemus. Nicodemus and Joseph of Arimathea, I think, were two people. Joseph of Arimathea, I think, also was a member of the Sanhedrin, I would suggest. And he and Nicodemus likely had some very private conversations. They were the ones that took Jesus' body off the cross. They worked together. I imagine they had several quiet conversations about the work of John and John's baptism and what John was saying. And now here comes Jesus. Look what Jesus is saying. In tandem to what John is saying. And in cooperation with what John is saying. And they finally take his body down. But right here Nicodemus says, "But our law forbids us. We can't condemn somebody without listening to him first." This multitude. But notice what the Pharisees say. These people that are impressed with Jesus are impressed because they're ignorant. They're ignorant of their own law. They're cursed. Nicodemus saith unto them, "He that came to him before, being one of them, doth our law judge a man except it first hear from him and know what he doeth?" Now watch this. "They answered and said unto him, Art thou also of Galilee? Search and see that out of Galilee ariseth no prophet." Now, their ignorance right there, they did not see. Now, it's easy for them to look down upon a group of people over in the temple, ignoramuses. They haven't studied as much as we have things under better control than they do. And the Pharisees were the teachers of the masses. But Nicodemus, anybody else, you ought to know this better than most. Out of Galilee arises no prophet. Now, I ask you this. Just how far did the knowledge of the Pharisee go with regard to his own law? I ask you that question. And then I want you to turn to Matthew chapter 4, and we'll find at least part of the answer. There's an Old Testament verse, Isaiah 9, verses 1 and 2, that's referenced here in Matthew chapter 4. There had been a prophecy given. The first two verses in Isaiah 9, verses 1 and 2. Now let's go to Matthew 4:12. Now when he heard that John was delivered up, he withdrew. This is Jesus. He withdrew into Galilee. And leaving Nazareth, he came and dwelt in Capernaum, which is by the sea, in the borders of Zebulun and Naphtali, that it might be fulfilled which was spoken through Isaiah the prophet, saying, now watch it, the land of Zebulun and the land of Naphtali, toward the sea, beyond the Jordan, Galilee of the Gentiles, the people that sat in the darkness saw a great light, and to them that sat in the region and shadow of death, to them did light spring up. And it says, from that time began Jesus to preach. Now, they didn't have the book of Matthew when these deliberations are going on, but they did have Isaiah, Isaiah 9. And Isaiah 9 said, in effect, that a prophet was going to come out of Galilee. That ignorant group of people over there, they don't know the law. That's why they're impressed. You see, you can get away with bluff, or sometimes you get away with your own ignorance, because it hasn't been pointed out to you yet. How do we take it when people tell us how ignorant we are? How do we take it when we slip up and say, oh man, I was wrong about that. Boy, I'm going to have to change this point. I'm glad you told me that. I needed greater insight on that. Man, this is helpful. You know, you're known by your character in the sense that how you react to the necessity of changing your views. I want to be honest enough to change when I have to change, and stable enough never to change when I shouldn't change. But it's a revealing thing right there that they did not recognize their own lack of depth in their own scriptures, but they were very willing to put themselves up above the common man, the rank and file. They just don't know. I don't want to be like the Pharisees in that connection at all. We'll stop right here for these two points. They just didn't know. They knew not, but there are great lessons in the New Testament along this line, and we want to know where we can, and to the degree that we can, because we can and because we should. If you're here this morning and not a Christian, come in faith, repent of your sins, be baptized into Christ for the remission of your sins. If you've done that and gone astray, we encourage you to come back right now while together we stand, while we sing, won't you come?